Tell me again about Bird Station.
Okay, so I was assigned to Bird Station, 24 personnel, 12 scientists and 12 CBs. All of our equipment was continued, dropped by C-124 Globemasters. Those were all prop planes. We're talking the old days now. Everything was left over from World War II type stuff. So after doing a year there, I had nothing to do because there was never any ionosphere or any way to get communications out or anything else. So the back end of the building of my radio shack in Antarctica, I started sitting back there with the meteorological people, and as doing so, I began to pick up their meteorological stuff, and I started to learn some of the meteorological technician stuff. So by the end of the year, I was doing their work. They were sleeping, and I was sending up the balloons and the radio sounds and everything else. So the guy in charge did get me a job then with polar operations. And then as a meteorological radio operator technician, I then went to the Canadian Northwest Territories, as you can see there. My first station was about 300 miles from the North Pole, 12-person station. 12. Can you imagine 12 people living in a 300 miles from the North Pole? And the daylight was just like a 24-hour day here for the year. 4 hours to dusk, 4 hours to light, 4 hours of dawn, and four months of this and this and this, right? And so I spent a year there. Then I went back, because I liked New Zealand, I went back through New Zealand to go to Antarctica again. Then I went to the pole station right there in 90 South. See, that's me up there in 90 South at the pole. So nowadays everybody says, I'm going to the South Pole. Well, they're not going to the South Pole unless they go to the South Pole and touch that pole. Otherwise, they're going to Antarctica. So there's quite a difference. And so then I went back and forth for 5.5 years to the Arctic and the Antarctic stations. And so that took me up to about 1963. But then I got out. I went in as a meteorological technician for ESSA, the Environmental Science Services Administration, because the government, being nice, wanted to keep me in the government, I guess, not to throw me out. So as a meteorological technician. But anyway, little things began to happen. About 1967, I then went to commercial diving school. Everything in those days was back, but the big old Mark V helmet stuff and so on. I was directed to go to diving school because a lot of scientists were jumping off the ships and trying to do diving, and they didn't know what they were doing. So when I came back then, I started running these diving classes. I remember, I was still in ESSA, because no acronym had not come about till 1970. So I was running classes for government agencies and state and local police departments, and diving classes and different things. But eventually, all of South Florida was without a recompression chamber. In 1970, the Navy closed down their chamber in Key West. There were no other chambers available, especially for the recreational diving community, from all of South Florida through the Caribbean, Central and South America. So I was directed then by Dr. Harris B. Stewart of AOML, because that's where I was housed, with AOML on Virginia Key. He told me to work with my Navy buddies, because I was already teaching a lot of Navy guys and so on, to see about getting a chamber for the South Florida area. So I was out on a cruise, but when I came back from a cruise one day, the chamber was sitting in the yard. This is under the fisheries, is where the chamber was eventually put. And when I came in, everybody there was saying, what the hell is this thing? I said, oh, that's a recompression chamber. most of the employees. What are you going to do with that? Well, we're going to treat divers. What do you mean you're going to treat divers? You can't do that. You'll kill everybody. And, of course, with volunteer help, that chamber was set up with volunteer help and volunteer money from the community. The reason it was so aggressively pushed was because the Dig a Dive Club in South Florida, they were very concerned there was no going to be any chamber available, so they contacted Harris B. Stewart because of me. I directed him to them, and that's how the chamber got delivered to AOML, Virginia Key, and then eventually over to fisheries, because one of my buddies managing the fisheries said, you can house it under here. So that's where we put it. And so after the chamber arrived, of course, and after, but the beginning of having the chamber in on Virginia Key, Miami, was all credited to the Dig a Dive Club. And we formed an organization called the Florida Underwater Council, which I was the president of, by raising community funds. All the money was raised to establish the chamber and even to build in the walls and so on. We had lawyers and bankers and everybody else helping us put that place together. So eventually we did. And the first case that came in was, I believe, was one of the worst cases we had of all of the, probably the 10 years that I've worked, have been the director of that facility. One came flying in on a helicopter landing in the parking lot at the Marine Fisheries. And boy, in between the cars, I couldn't believe it. These young Navy pilots coming in from Vietnam, they scared the hell out of me when they started landing on our parking lot in the fisheries. But that was one of the worst cases we ever had, because it was a PhD type of an individual who was a director of a nursing college somewhere up in Chicago. He had a bunch of nursing students with him, and he evidently came up holding his breath, and he was very unconscious and so on. They kept him alive on the boat. They had the Air Force base in Homestead, Florida, fly him up to us. We got him into the chamber. After a few treatments and so on, the guy went on to live, and he went on to do very good. So that was a very exciting event for all of South Florida, because it was in the newspapers and everything else, and because it had such great notoriety for for NOAA. NOAA couldn't possibly give me enough money after that. They always wanted to know, what can we do for you? What can we do for you? So that place kept existing to go on.